You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
November 25th, 2017. This is Spinola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola, broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. I hope that everyone had an enjoyable Thanksgiving. Thanks for joining me at republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit and subscribe to SpingolaSpeaks.net and WoolliesBlog.blogspot.com. and ScreeningSandyHook.net. During the program, email questions or comments to comment@spingola.email. Please visit the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. View our guest lineup at spingola.com. In addition to the links for each guest, I also have other interesting links relative to the guest and his or her subject. And today it's very important that you view these links. I have several links associated with our guest, and I hope that you will look at those links. We won't take calls until the second and third hour. My guest today for the first hour is Dr. Lori Handrahan. She is the author of Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. Her website is Lori, and that's L-O-R-I, Handrahan, H-A-N-D-R-A-H-A-N. I think the child rape is so horrific that most people simply avoid talking or thinking about it because we do not want to acknowledge that such wickedness exists. Dr. Lori Handrahan has focused her research efforts on the military, law enforcement, the legal profession, and educators. She states, pedophiles have infiltrated government service and cultivated positions of power to protect their crimes and access children. Children are not being protected. Pedophiles are. Too many pedophiles are government employees. Pedophiles can and do easily provide cover to each other from various powerful positions they hold inside and outside of government. Pedophiles are extensive networkers. They brag about the crimes they commit. A police chief trading in child rape is very likely to know local judges, state legislators, teachers, and prosecutors also engaged in the crime. Pedophiles not only network online, they also meet in person to share children for rape. They know each other, and they protect each other. This is America's wake-up call. The child rape industry is no longer a Russian, Asian, or Eastern European problem. The illegal trade in child rape is an American problem. Far too many local, state, and federal government employees in sensitive positions. Oh, this is so tragic. When I was reading the book, it was just, I don't know how many times I shed tears over the crimes and the statistics that Dr. Lori was providing. But far too many local, state, and federal government employees in sensitive positions of trust within our communities and national security structures are involved, quote unquote. Dr. Lori, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, I hope that every single listener will purchase your book, and I really recommend Kindle edition because that way you have live links, and mm-hmm. I looked at the sources as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't look at the sources. I look at the sources right. and the citations because I want to look at what you've looked at. And right. so it was just, horrific. I don't know how you did this. I bless your heart for doing this and for thinking about the children and for opening this up, for revealing what is going on. So where do you want to start?
Well, I think I'll just pick up on your comment about the Kindle version, and I'm really glad to hear that you like the live links. We, made extra work while we were writing, while my publisher was helping me prepare the manuscript and while I was writing it, because we had to prepare it both for a paper version and also for a Kindle version. So that meant making sure all the hyperlinks that you wouldn't see in the paper version, but you would see in the Kindle version, were accurate and were still alive and the site hadn't been taken down or the news story hadn't been taken off. But I did think it was really important because I was hoping that people would do, as you said, that they'd say, really, this can't be true. Was this really true? How did I not know about this arrest of this very prominent person? And then you could just click on the hyperlink and see the news story. So I'm glad that you found that helpful. The other thing in the book, a lot of people have been commenting about extensive use of the footnotes and the references for each case that I profiled. And those are a fraction of actual the amount of references that went into the research, because for every arrest that I look at, sometimes there's no local media because sometimes they'll be successful in covering it up. But typically there's anywhere between 5, to 20 articles, depending on how much local media coverage happened. So really I could have referenced all 20 different articles for each arrest. And we didn't do that because there would have been just so many references. So for every arrest, I usually did one or two references at the most if another source had, vastly different information than a different article. So the amount of references in the book are a fraction of the amount of work that went into the book.
Great. And the book is available at Amazon. People are asking in the chat room. Yes, it is available at Amazon. And I do have the paper book copy of it also, but I thought, no, I have to look at those links. And so I went ahead and got the Kindle.
Great. That's great. I'm really glad that you found that helpful. Thank you for sharing that. That makes me feel good about the work that we put into it. Thank you.
Yes, and there's so many links and so much information, so many resources. Nobody is going to say, oh, she's just making this up, or this couldn't be true.
Right.
But everything
that was the
is...
aim.
Yes.
Yeah, so very, very well documented. Well, I mean, as you know, because you've been following this issue, quite closely yourself, unfortunately, and now with the Harvey Weinstein and Me Too and that this issue, larger issue, is starting to get some more mainstream exposure, child rapists and predators, men who are predators, mostly men, although there are some women and increasingly more women, they don't want to go to jail. So it's in their interest to just lie and to also attack who's ever trying to expose them or the illegal industry and to try to destroy them. So anybody who's tried to research this, there's often this false taint of it's just conspiracy. This can't really be happening in America. It's all just a conspiracy. It's made up. It's fake. It's fake news, right? And so I wanted to really put my social science research degree to good work. I'm a trained social scientist at one of the top 50 research institutes in the world, so I know how to do good research. But I didn't want to write a social science book that would only be shared among a few academics. I wanted to write a book that everybody would pick up and say, this makes sense to me. Like, I didn't understand what this was about, but I can read this and I can use the resources that are in it. So I hope it'll also be used for training and teaching in the classroom with law enforcement. I hope prosecutors will use it. I hope that people do find it a useful reference. And the other thing with the references is that I never use non-mainstream media. So if you look through the end notes and the footnotes, I never use people's blogs. I never use anything that wasn't quote unquote a legitimate mainstream media source or direct court documents from the Department of Justice or the courts or the police records. So that also people couldn't say this isn't true. I mean, there's no way if you sit down and read this book that you can deny what's happening in our country, you know?
Right. And you did use all mainstream news outlets. And, yes. it was just mind-boggling. I read a little bit each day. Because it was very hard to take.
Yeah.
You had to give yourself a rest.
Yes, you did.
I just can't imagine how you did this. You are a very strong, courageous person.
Thank you. That's all I have to say.
I'm getting back to the Weinstein thing. I was thinking that with the publication of your book, which is just very recent, and also the publication of Trafficking, which I also purchased that book, that there would be, there's so much emphasis in the mainstream about these adults and these Hollywood people and others, politicians, that I wonder if that was, here I go being conspiratorial, I wonder if that was to take the focus off of what you were bringing out. Because I'm sure that there are thousands of people that did not want to see you publish this book.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I don't know if it's the, I mean, I've been following obviously the whole Weinstein and Kevin Spacey and all the names that are breaking now, Charlie Rose and this hashtag Me Too. And then I've been excited and frustrated because so far a lot of the coverage that the media is really covering widely is adult, the people, predators preying on adults. And not to diminish what's happened to the women and men who have come forward, but you know, when it's a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old child and they're being anally raped while they're handcuffed and drugged and tortured, I mean, and the horrible things that are being done to children, it's just a completely different level. So I've been hoping that the conversation would shift, and I've been hoping that some of the movie stars who have huge media platforms would start to say, and what about the children? Because anybody like Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey, who did prey on children, as we know, these were boys that he, you know, tried to molest allegedly, have come forward. Predators are predators, and they're going to go after the most vulnerable people that they can and people that they have power over to commit the crime. So, in my opinion, a man who acts as a predator against adult men or women is going to do the same with children. So any of these people are very likely to also be doing child pornography. And that probable cause, if people want to search, I've seen search warrants be pulled in cases that I've looked at just because somebody reported strange behavior of somebody else. So it's enough to say this person was acting strangely around children. And if in that jurisdiction you happen to have a good police officer who's not doing child porn himself, and a good prosecutor who's not doing child porn himself, you can get an investigation just on somebody saying this person was acting strange around children. So I think that there's a real link. It's a predatory behavior, and I'm hoping that one of these Hollywood stars will pick up the book and say, wow, we need to also look what's going on to the children, because children don't have a voice. They have no way to get out into the media. They're not able to do what some of these people can do to raise the issue.
Right. Exactly. You have covered the military, law enforcement, the legal profession, and educators.
Yeah.
And I was just amazed, and particularly special ed educators and others. It was just mind-boggling to recognize, for instance, the military. I'm jumping around here. But the military, you give numbers of people who are in the military who are using government computers to download pornography. And And the way that you talk about it, that you describe it, each child that they are viewing is a person, an individual that is being sadistically tortured, raped. This is a human being, a child, a defenseless, innocent child. How could anybody
I think that's what I really wanted to get across in the book, because when you read in the newspaper that a colonel in the military was arrested for 30,000 images of child pornography, that doesn't mean anything to most people because they don't know what child pornography is. And what the mainstream media has been very good at is that they will cover these arrests as one-off local news events. So it's kind of the crime beat person will say this guy got arrested, and they'll say he had 30,000 images. But that doesn't mean anything. And what I've been asking journalists to do, and I'll frequently contact a local journalist who has reported on a case that I'm looking at, and I'll say, would you please put the criminal complaint in your story? Put a link, a live link, so people can click onto the criminal complaint or the police record and see what this person was actually doing, because not all criminal complaints are of good quality. Some of them don't tell you very much. But again, if you have a really great cop, great investigator, you can have these incredible criminal complaints, which give very detailed knowledge of what this person was doing, down to what they were saying on the chat lines. You know, what I did was I tried to pull out these little text boxes around the book, and I profiled some of the stories in addition to writing about some of them. But if you go onto my Medium site, a Medium profile, I've just been posting these very long lists, which just profile arrest after arrest after arrest. And so people can actually start to see the pattern. So I think the challenge for me in writing the book was, and with my publisher and my agent tried for 4 years to get all the big publishers, Random House and everybody, to publish it. And they wouldn't do it because what we were told over and over again from the people that we pitched the book to was that it was too difficult for them to read, that they felt nauseous, that they felt sick, that it really affected them psychologically. They couldn't get through it, and they weren't going to publish a book like this because Americans wouldn't buy the book because it was just too horrific to read. And in the original sample chapters of the book that we were pitching to the big publishers, I would have these long lists. And so then the other constructive feedback we got was that these long lists didn't help, that they weren't just going to publish long lists. So the challenge for me was trying to get across the scope of what's going on without being able to publish long lists, because saying 30,000 images, that doesn't mean anything to anybody. You're saying this many people. So that's what we came up with in the hyperlinks. You'll see each chapter links to, I have a whole list of military people up on Medium, far more than are profiled in the book. So if you are interested in that subject, then you can go on the Medium and you can look through all of the different cases. And then those are only a fraction of the arrests that are known. I mean, I can't, doing this without being paid as a volunteer on my own, there's no way I can document all of the arrests that are happening. So that's, I think, what's even more mind-boggling, that all I'm trying to give people is a small sample of the scope of what's really going on, what's happening out there. And these are all children. These are American children. So to circle back, you mentioned the military. I mean, these are children that are the sons and daughters of either the people who are abusing them. A lot of fathers are doing this to their own kids, or they're abusing children of family friends. And sometimes the friends know and sometimes they don't. But like there was a military case, and I profiled that in the book, and that was a case that AP did a really great year-long investigation into sex abuse, child sex abuse, and child abuse in the military. It was a brilliant, brilliant investigation. So that was one of the cases that the AP had pulled out that I also noted. And the guy was molesting and raping his friend's, I think it was a 3-year-old son, and the friend didn't know, right? So you think, oh, this is my best friend, and he's a great guy, and he loves children, and he's always there to babysit and help. And it's so nice that we have somebody that we can trust to help babysit our child, right? And then, you know, anybody basically who is spending a lot of time trying to get near a child should be suspect.
Absolutely. Alrighty, we are going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. This is Deanna, and our guest the first hour today is Dr. Lori Handrahan. She is the author of Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. I implore you to buy a copy of that book at Amazon, and I suggest the Kindle version with live links. It will amaze you. Buy it as a gift for your friends. This is something that needs to be revealed. People need to know about this. They need to take action on it. And that's one thing that the Dr. Lori has included in the book are action items so that you can call somebody or you can email somebody. You can contact somebody and demand that some action be taken. So not only has she presented the problem, she's also presented some solutions. Okay, you were talking about the person that gets very close to your child and is always there and trusted and everything, and they're not. And they target children, pre-verbal children, because pre-verbal children cannot tell what is happening to them, cannot verbalize it.
Right. Right. So that's what I tried to get, very clear. It's one thing that almost nobody has been willing to talk about is the amount of infants and toddlers who are being raped. So you'll see a lot more in mainstream media, and I think there's much more of a general knowledge now than there was, say, 5 years ago, that teenagers are trafficked. And people will talk about the average age of a trafficked child being 10 or 12, and that's actually not true. I mean, under fours are considered platinum on the market because they can't be witnesses. So if you don't have a witness, you don't have a crime, you can't be prosecuted. So what I tried to get across in the book is that they're predators. These are very strategic decisions that these men make to enable them to commit the crime with total impunity for years. So they target under fours, not because this is some sexual attraction. It's because those kids can't be witnesses in a court. And I have some quotes that I put into the book from various criminal complaints and other people's research where they say, my child's starting to get too many words now, so I'm going to start abusing the younger baby my wife just had because I got to start early before she can talk too, right? So that's also the thing with, and it's been a long learning curve for me. I've been researching this now for 7 years, nonstop, day in and day out. So when I started to type in, every morning after I have my coffee and I do my morning meditation and prayers, I'm trying to start my day right, I always do a search in the search box on Twitter for two words, child porn and child sex abuse. Those are the key words that I look for. And I don't, sometimes I'll miss a day or two, but it's a pretty regular habit, like sort of flossing my teeth, so I can kind of understand the trend and see what's happening and who's being arrested. And so in the beginning when I started to do this, I started to see, a lot of teachers being arrested. So then I would type into the search box, teacher, child porn, arrest. Often if you add the word arrest in, then sometimes you don't get the whole story, though, because sometimes they'll say busted or, they'll say sentenced. So sometimes that keyword doesn't help. But then when you start to look at teachers, I started to see, an enormous number of special education teachers. And that's up on my Medium, the one about special education. And there's a very, very long list, and it's a fraction of the total arrest, And I was horrified. Because I thought, what human being, who would molest a child with Down syndrome? And you're a special education teacher, then of course it makes sense. If you're a pedophile and if you're thinking like a pedophile, you want to molest a kid who can't be a witness in court, right? So a Down syndrome kid can't be a witness. So they love to go after disabled kids. They love it. They're not credible witnesses. So I think it's just horrifying. Imagine you have an autistic son or daughter, and as a parent, you're already going through an enormous amount of difficulty trying to take care of your autistic son or daughter. And imagine you get this great special education teacher who you think is fabulous because he just loves your son or daughter, and you find out that he's been raping them, It's just appalling. So yeah, the amount of special education teachers is very disturbing. And then I had cited a UN report which said that it's now known that pedophiles try to adopt disabled children so they can have a permanent sex slave in their home, basically. So it's the same thing when I didn't put doctors in the book, but I do have up on my Medium profile a big thing of doctors. And when you start to look at doctors who've been arrested, what do you find overwhelmingly? Yes, you find a lot of pediatricians. You find a lot of pediatric oncologists. And you find heads of pediatric oncology departments at famous children's hospitals, Harvard Children's Hospital, Hershey Children's Hospital. And again, in the beginning, I was really shocked. Like, are you kidding? Your child has cancer and you think this doctor's great. And meanwhile, he's masturbating to infants and toddlers being raped, right?
Okay, we're going to a quick break. We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest is Dr. Lori Handrahan. Her book is Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. It's available at Amazon. Her website is LoriHandrahan.com, and I have links on the schedule page to many relevant things, to her Medium page where you can read about the cases. And Dr. Lori, you were talking right before the break about oncologists who specialize in children, and somebody in the chat room said that a lot of priests are also guilty of this kind of thing.
Yes.
But in your
yes.
book, you talk about the educators.
Mm-hmm. What I tried to do was, that was again another challenge in the book, the scope of it, because it's so huge and there's so many men in positions of power in all walks of life who are raping children on a regular basis and producing videos and images and live streaming this, you know, which we call child pornography, which is really rape and torture, crime scene material. But although I had researched doctors and I have posted that, and I'd researched some other non-governmental positions, and with priests, at least with Catholic priests, this has been widely covered now in the mainstream media and after the Boston Globe and the film The Spotlight. So I didn't do religion, but the decision I made in the book that this sectors, the professional sectors that I profiled, I decided to look at all government employees. So the only area where I have a few non-government employees was in the legal section, where I also included private practice lawyers, and I explained that I included them because they often cycle in and out of government positions. So the attorney will be a private practice attorney, then they'll be appointed, you know, to a prosecutor position as a DA, assistant DA, assistant prosecutor, and then they'll go back into private practice after they've been an assistant AG or federal prosecutor. So there's kind of a cycle there. But when you mentioned educators, so the largest profession where the most government employees are in this country are teachers. So from primary all the way through to university level. So I thought that was really important to profile that. And of course, those are people who put themselves in positions of power and who have access to children, right, and power over children's lives. The fact that they're being paid by our tax money to do this is, to me, just appalling. I mean, it's impossible to say one is worse than another, but if somebody's a government employee and they're a pedophile, they're better able to protect their crime, better able to protect themselves, and better able to access victims with impunity. And they're doing it on our tax money, often on their work computer when they're supposed to be working. So that's what I decided to focus on, all the sectors of government employees involved in this crime.
And you stated that in the book, I'm trying to find the page here, that there are at least 100 times more students who are targeted for this horrid criminal activity than there are that are targeted by priests.
And that's not my quote. That's from one of the best researchers on sex abuse in schools. Yes. And she said, I forget her name now, I'll have to go find it too. She said that she thinks it's 100 times worse than what's going on in the church. And I, knowing what I know, I would agree simply because there's so many teachers. There's just the volume. It's just huge, you know.
That's Dr. Shakeshaft.
Yes, and she's one of the top experts on sexual abuse by educators in the country. She's absolutely brilliant. And if you're interested in this issue, I would definitely encourage you to go to her website and to get involved. They have I think it's called SESAMI is the acronym, which is like sexual abuse of children by educators or something like that.
Yes.
Their website.
Educator yes. Sexual Misconduct, a synthesis of existing literature.
Yes.
And, yeah, this is, what is so amazing to me is that there's no major database. They're not keeping records of these arrests so that the average person has to, well, there's no access.
There's no way
unless,
to know. Yeah, no. That's the problem. That's what I've really wanted to do is build this database. I mean, that's my professional dream right now is to get employment again in an institution, to get a job as a professor again, to have a university step up and say, we will hire you to do this research. This is important research, and find donors who will help fund, a small staff and graduate students. And we could put together a public database absolutely with no problem. It just requires staff, paying people. And I think it's critical. So for instance, like I'm updating my professor list right now of professors and staff because for some reason that list went totally viral. It's up on Medium and I discussed
right.
that in the book. So I get, now it's over 473 shares of that one. And I think it's, I don't know, I'm speculating, but like not everybody knows a police officer personally. Not everybody knows a military staff personally. But everybody knows a teacher. I mean, we all had teachers, right? Going
right.
through kindergarten and college, and maybe it's the cost of college, or I don't know if that's just something that we can all relate to, or the fact that you wouldn't expect teachers to be doing this, especially professors, who are supposed to be our best and our brightest, educating our country's leaders. So the professors one has really, really bothered people. But on a regular basis, maybe not every week, but it feels like every week, every other week, I will get an email from somebody saying, I was abused by this professor, or this professor was actually my father who abused me and nobody ever knew that, or this professor was arrested and it was never made public. That was Stetson University, and I did talk about that in the book too. But I just got another, and people will say to me, what should I do? I want to report this person now because I know he's still abusing children, and what should I do? So, well, it's frustrating for me not having a position where I can really help a lot more people. So I always respond, and I try to guide them to resources, and if I know a retired law enforcement or a private investigator in their area or a good lawyer in their area, I can refer them to. But recently a woman contacted me, and she told me about a provost at Lehigh University, and she said that there were some other people that she knew had also been involved with abuse, and they were still out free. And so she said she saw my article and the list, and she just couldn't. It was bothering her that she'd never reported these other people who she knew were involved in child abuse. So I promised her I'd update the list of professors. So yeah, this guy was Stephen James Devlin, and he was a provost at Lehigh University. And, each story is more horrific than the last one. You keep thinking you can't be shocked anymore, and then he is. So this is a good example. This was 2008 when he was sentenced to 3 to 6 years in prison. And that's already a long time ago. So if you wanted to send your child to Lehigh University, you wouldn't necessarily know that they had a senior official arrested on child pornography. Now, if there was a database, you could type in Lehigh University and you could see how many people at that university had been arrested. You could ask the university, what have you done? What steps have you done to make sure that my child will be safe and that my tuition money that I'm paying to send, for my child to be educated, that child is not going to be educated by a man who's masturbating in his office to the brutal rape and torture of children before he walks into the classroom, which is what a lot of these people are doing, which I find to be appalling. So when I started to look at professors, you will see over and over and over again that many of these universities have had multiple arrests, and they just try to get it covered up as fast as possible and bury it so nobody knows about it, get the news stories removed or make sure new stories don't happen, rather than be proactive and prevent this from happening in the first place, right? I mean, this is an easy crime to prevent on many levels. It's just that there's been zero political will, and there's been zero political will because the data hasn't been gathered, so nobody's even really aware that this is, it's a huge problem in this country.
Right. Now, there were a lot of things that happened under the jurisdiction of Eric Holder, the former attorney general. And does this have something to do with the Department of Justice not taking the responsibility to create a database or to make these?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yes. DOJ, yeah. I mean, DOJ is at fault here. They should have a database, and it should be public. Absolutely. You know, I think in the beginning when I talked about acknowledgement, a lot of DOJ officials were incredibly helpful to me as I would call them up. It all just comes down to a good person in the job because our systems of accountability and oversight are basically completely broken. So sometimes I'd call and the person wouldn't want to help or be helpful, but very often I'd get a public affairs person at DOJ around the country at the various prosecuting offices, and they would be so incredibly helpful. And they'd say, I'm so glad somebody's finally researching this, and nobody's been looking at this, and nobody knows. Like, one that always stands out in my mind, this is under my national security chapter. This is David O'Brien, who was the head scientist in America, America's top scientist on nuclear detection. So he was supposed to monitor any kind of nuclear activity going on around the world for our protection. And he was doing child pornography on his Air Force computers. You know, if you don't think that that affects our national security, right? So, and again, it had been covered in the local press, not very widely, maybe one or two articles. And what will happen is they'll cover the arrest, and they rarely do any follow-up. Sometimes they'll cover the sentencing, but usually the sentencing is a year or 2 years later, and by that time the media has lost interest and moved on. So you don't know what happens with these cases. So in that case, when I talked to the public affairs person at DOJ in Florida, they were so happy that I had got the criminal complaint because they said, like, nobody got the criminal complaint. Like, we put a lot of work into this case. This guy was doing really bad things. We put him behind bars for 5 years, and the media didn't cover it. Now, that's a case that the media really needed to cover. Everybody needed to know that the head of our nuclear, you know, deterrence agency had been doing child pornography on his computers, and he had accessed Russian websites. You know, so talk about a breach of security. I mean, I have so many stories like that. The dean, who was an assistant dean at the University of Virginia, Michael Morris, looks like the nicest guy in the world, right? Played tennis, had two teenage daughters. And again, that was widely covered, his arrest, but nobody got his criminal complaint. And the criminal complaint changed the story. And the DOJ people said to me, thank you. Thank you so much for reporting on the criminal complaint. Now so there's many people that you can blame about why this hasn't been more widely covered. In that case, the journalists really needed to do that, and they do need to do that. So when you read Michael Morris's criminal complaint, it's also up on my Medium site, you know, find out he was, I think it was a six-year-old girl who was being forced to perform oral sex on a man while a knife was held to her throat. You know, he was masturbating to children in cages. He was pretending that he was a 12 and 13, 14-year-old boy and girl on Facebook. He set up Facebook pages and profiles to get other teenagers to masturbate for him, to produce child porn for him. That's much different than just saying he was arrested for child pornography, which is what all the local media said. They didn't explain what he was doing. And you need to know what this man was doing, because he was a very important person at a very prestigious university.
Oh, goodness. And I sent you an email during the week about a doctor, a local doctor. I know this going, you know, talking about something you didn't cover specifically in the book. And all it talked about was that this doctor was arrested for child pornography, for having these things in his possession. But, and I thought it was horrid. I knew this doctor. I'd gone to this doctor. Mm-hmm. I found him very non-empathetic, non-compassionate. Mm-hmm. He was arrogant, so I went to somebody else in the same clinic. But they didn't explain exactly what it entailed. And then after reading your book, I looked up the arrest record again, and I had a whole different view of him. Oh, gosh. And, of course, we're all familiar with Hastert and Sandusky.
Right. No, it's great that you did that, because you said earlier, like, I have a lot of actions that people can take. Because what I didn't want to do is also, and I always did this as a professor too, I mean, knowledge for the sake of knowledge, okay, it's good to know more. Knowledge for the sake of knowledge is fine. But without being able to take action to change it, I think it's only, you know, it's half the battle. So I never wanted my students to learn without feeling empowered that they could actually do something about an issue that they cared about in their own world. And so it's the same with the book. Like, you read the book, it's really hard to read. It makes you very upset. And so what can you do? Oh, and this is such a huge problem, there's no action I can take. But there is. Just getting those criminal complaints from your courthouse, from your police station, and then contacting the journalist who reported on a case in your local area and saying, I want you to put the link to the criminal complaint on your story. I want everybody in town to know what this man was doing. That alone is huge, because if everybody started to do that on a regular basis, the media would report on this in a much broader and deeper way, and we'd know what was going on. The same thing, DOJ needs to have a database, of course, but I have a section there for people to contact Betsy DeVos with the education, because the education part, we should have an entire list of every single educator, public educator, who's been arrested on child sex abuse, child pornography related charges. That's something easy that the Department of Education could do and should do. So if enough people contact Betsy DeVos and say, hey, we want the Department of Education to have a public database, that would be huge. That would be hugely important. There's an action item for the U.S. Sentencing Commission. So that's the only current research that we have on child pornography arrests in this country. And that's old now. It's 2012. They haven't updated it. And so their media relations person was fabulous. And she said, you know, we'd love to hear from the public. If enough people contact us and ask us to do a new report on child pornography arrests, we'll do it. So that's an easy, you know, and you can even contact these people on Twitter. So it doesn't take much. It takes a few seconds out of your day, literally, to say, hey, we need an updated report. Please give us an updated report. And when you do, the last U.S. Sentencing Commission report, 2012, doesn't give you us any demographics other than race and sex, right? But I want to know, where were these people employed? Were they government jobs? You know, I want to know how many federal former prosecutors have been arrested. I want to know how many federal law enforcement have been arrested, right? Don't you?
Right. And that is a wonderful thing. You do have, you were talking about Liz Dawson with the U.S. Sentencing Commission, and you have her email address and her phone number and everything. And if you have the Kindle version, all you have to do is do a search on action item, and you have the whole list. And you can go through that list and do something every day. You could do something every day on this list.
Absolutely, just like flossing your teeth. You know, just
right.
Contact Liz, the U.S. Sentencing Commission Public Affairs every day. Hey, any progress on your new child porn report? Contact Betsy DeVos on Twitter every day. Hey, we want to list every single person who's an educator in America who's been arrested. We want to list, right? Because a lot of these guys, and this is very good reporting actually by USA Today, which I profiled. They did extensive reporting on how many teachers are getting rehired, even while they're on the sex offender registry.
Oh, I know. Is that awful? Oh, my gosh. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. This is Deanna, our guest today for the first hour, unless we can convince her to stay over and take some calls. Anyway, is Dr. Lori Handrahan. She is the author of Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. Her website is lorihandrahan.com. Everyone must have a copy of her book. It's just, I think it's imperative. I really do. It's for the safety of our children and the future of our country. This needs to be revealed. People need to know about it. And this is just the best book you could have on this subject.
Thank you.
And I'm just so grateful that you wrote it.
Thank you.
And I know you paid a heavy price for it.
Well, learning about this subject was the price. I mean, I haven't paid a price for writing the book, but the book comes out of, yeah, this is a personal situation for me.
Yes.
So, yep, that is true.
You talk about John Grisham in your book, and that he gave an interview with Telegraph, and he later retracted it, but once you say something, it pretty much is out there.
Right.
And so go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, that, I'm glad you brought that up. That's really interesting, because for some reason, somebody recently pulled up those old articles when Grisham made that comment on Twitter, and it started circulating all over Twitter, and that was back in 2012, I believe. So I'm not sure why it got a lot of play in the last week, but it did. All these people found this article and started sending it out. So what he had, that's in my chapter on infants and toddlers. And what he had said was, that was the very first thing I posted on Medium because I couldn't get published anymore. So I lost my job as a professor, wrongly terminated, in part for my research, and then nobody would publish me. And before I was doing an op-ed almost every week and doing television interviews, I had a very credible platform. And then I didn't. So my friends kept saying to me, just put it up on Medium. You know, anyone can post anything. It's just a blog. So I was frustrated with that because I would prefer to be published as an academic. You know, it's important to publish things because it's a mark of credibility about the work. But anyway, I had written this thing about John Grisham as an op-ed, and I had sent it around to newspapers and tried to get it published, and I couldn't. So I posted it on Medium. And I rewrote that for this chapter on infants and toddlers because I talked about how the American media was covering it. So I said it was a bizarre few days in the American news cycle during the autumn of 2014. John Grisham, crime fiction writer, suddenly came out in defense of America's illegal child rape industry. In an interview with The Telegraph, Grisham claimed and later retracted that America's prisons are filled with guys my age, 60-year-old white men, who have never harmed anyone, would never touch a child. But they got online one night and started surfing around, probably had too much to drink or whatever, and pushed the wrong button and went too far and got into child porn or whatever. I mean, it's just such an appalling statement to make. And what's interesting about this, I ended up contacting the journalist who had done this interview. You need to go to a break now.
Yes, we're at the top of the hour. Would you like to stay over?
No, well, I'll let you, I can do a little bit of a wrap up, but I can't be on for 2 hours because I have something else at, it's 5:30 my time.
Okay, we'll be right back and you can finish the story and do a little bit of a wrap up. Be right back.
Okay, thank you.
Public Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is, for just a little bit longer, is Dr. Lori Hanrahan. She is the author of Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. It is a must-have for everyone who is listening and for everyone's friends and relatives. People need to read this book. Her website is LoriHanrahan.com. And you were talking about Grisham, and so go ahead and continue that.
Well, so, yeah, Peter Foster was the journalist who had that interview, and he was in Washington. He was the Washington bureau guy here with the Times at that point, the Telegraph at that point. So I actually met with him, the journalist. It was really weird because he said, you know, he was interviewing Grisham and they were also doing a video interview at the same time he was taking notes for print media. So they had him on the video, and there's a video of Grisham saying this, unless it's been taken down. And they were interviewing him on one of his new books that was being released. So it kind of came out of no place. And the journalist told me, you know, directly that it was just really a strange thing. Like, they were interviewing him on his book, and all of a sudden he comes out of no place and says this. And it was linked, the larger story was one of his friends had recently
been arrested or had just got out of prison for his arrest. I can't remember the timeline for child pornography. And then the journalist, it got covered for like 2 or 3 days and then it got buried, had contacted this guy, and that was the story, that Grisham was feeling sorry for his friend. But yeah, no, not a, yeah, very strange. But it shows, I mean, there's absolutely nothing true about that statement that he was then later forced to retract, because people were saying, oh, he should be, you know, investigated for child pornography based on probable cause just for the statement, which I agree with. I think that anybody who says that this crime is a victimless crime and that nobody who you know, would never harm a child is just doing child pornography because they're drunk. I mean, none of that makes sense. The whole statement was just very bizarre.
Absolutely. Not that I read Grisham, but I would never read anything that he writes ever again. Not that
well,
I read him.
Well, that's what a lot of people said. Right. So if you go on Twitter and you hashtag John Grisham, you'll see that recently everybody found this and started talking about it again, saying I'm going to boycott him from now on, and how could he possibly say this, you know?
Right. And you talk about Stephen Collins.
Yeah.
Who, oh, my gosh. These stories of people that we've seen on TV and in movies. And,
right.
And
that one was so weird because it was all like, that all happened within 2 or 3 days. And I was sort of sitting there reading all of this going, why aren't journalists connecting the dots here? I mean, the dots are huge. I mean, this is a big story and nobody's connecting these dots. They're just reporting it as one-off events, you know?
Yeah, it's just amazing. Absolutely amazing. So what would you like our readers to do, or our readers, our listeners to do? We want you to read the book. And
right.
That's with any book. And the reason I say it's the very best book, I just wrote in the chat room. It is the very best on the subject because of resources with any book. Primary sources are everything. You have all the primary sources.
Right. Yeah, I think, and I'll be happy to explain that too, because I think that is important for the, so each, sometimes I can put together a case profile of an arrest quickly with just the media reports, but so not in every single case do I always contact the prosecutor and the law enforcement, but usually I do, and I usually try to get the criminal complaint. So each arrest can take me anywhere from 4 to 6 hours to actually get all of the documents. So it does take a long time, and all the primary documents are there, and that, I think that that's very important for people who are interested in good research and learning about the subject. And I guess, you know, what I'd love people to do is read the book and share the book and then take action and start to organize within their social networks, their professional and personal networks, within their church circles, on their Facebook groups, and say, okay, yeah, every day we're going to contact the U.S. Sentencing Commission Twitter account. We're going to ask them to update and do a new report on how bad the child pornography problem is in America. Okay, every day we're going to ask Betsy DeVoe and the Department of Education to get together a list so that we know that teachers who are teaching our children aren't also registered sex offenders. I mean, the fact that a registered sex offender can get a job as a teacher because there's no comprehensive list on this is appalling, right? What about your cops? I mean, you want to know that if you contact your local police officer because your child has been raped, that he isn't somebody who's also raping children. Right? So you want to know how many cops in your town, in your community, in your state have been arrested on these charges. And then what action did that organization, that police department, or that school, or that university, did they take to make sure this doesn't happen again? And that's what I was saying earlier. It's a relatively easy preventable crime in terms of stopping the child pornography aspect of the actual rapes. I mean, the sharing of the visual of it. So there's a group in Sweden called NetClean, and there's many others, but this is one that I really like, and they have software that anybody can purchase and any organization can install, and if somebody attempts to trade child rape on that network that you've installed this blocker, they'll get reported immediately to law enforcement, and that's very helpful because it takes that ability to cover up the crime out of the decision maker's hands. So let's say Lehigh University says, yeah, you know, our provost had been arrested for this. And so we, after that, installed this software, NetClean, on our computer network. Anybody who would attempt than trade in child rape on university networks, the president of the university or the lawyer, the, you know, general counsel for the university, they wouldn't be able to decide, oh no, we can't report it because it's the provost and, you know, that would be bad for our university and he's such an important man and he's such a nice guy otherwise. And it would be taken out of their hands. So it's immediately reported to law enforcement. That is something that's easy to do and it just requires political will, you know, and quite frankly, every single institution in the country ought to have this installed. The other thing that a university can do is they can call up the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force in their state. Every state has one. Some of them have two or three or four. And they could say, we'd like you to come in and check our networks. We're asking you to examine our computer networks to see if child pornography is being traded, and we want you to arrest, you know, whoever it is. And they could clean up their networks, right? They don't want to do that, though, because they don't want the negative publicity. So what they do instead, which is, I think, not a good strategy, is they continue to protect criminals who are harming children, who are trading in child rape, on computer networks that belong to these organizations that are often our tax money. And then when they have one-off arrests, they try to cover it up as quickly as they can. And that's not a good strategy. We have to get out in front on this, and we have to demand that every single government agency, every single university, every single school, church, whatever, install the software, invite the Internet Crimes Task Force in so they don't have to get a search warrant. Make sure your networks are clean. I mean, we have smoke-free campuses, for God's sake, but we don't have child pornography-free campuses in this country?
Exactly. One of your titles in the book, protect the institution, not the children. That's insane. And as you say, they're just trying to protect their institution. They don't want any bad name attached to it. Ah, oh, that is just despicable. Absolutely
right.
Despicable.
And what we, the people, need to do is let these institutions know that you're not going to protect your institutional reputation by covering up the crime of child rape anymore. So this is what that Me Too movement is all about, the hashtag. There's a new hashtag circulating called Church Too. And I see, I mean, so many youth church leaders being arrested all the time. I mean, it's, you know, just as big there as it is anywhere else. But that's what we need to say. You are an institution that we will trust when you proactively take measures to make sure this doesn't happen in the workplace, in your institution, that your institution is free from this crime. That you're not harboring criminals, you're not protecting criminals, because that's what people who trade in child rape are, criminals.
They are, absolutely. Oh, my goodness. This is just an incredible work that you've done, and I just can't thank you enough for putting this together and educating people. And the book is just... it's just tremendous. Everyone needs to have a copy. And the point, too, that you make in the book is that a lot of this is going on during work time, where people who work for the government aren't really working. They're surfing the Internet, or they're downloading this horrid, this pornography. And It's a cultural thing, yeah, as you've indicated in the book. This is affecting the entire country, the entire culture of America. I don't know what else to say. It's just, you talk also about daycares and preschools.
Yeah.
And of course when we think of daycare centers, the first one that comes to mind, which I can't remember the name, was it, what was the famous one that they made a movie of it?
The Martin.
Yeah, McMartin.
Yeah,
yes.
Martin, right.
And there were there was a movie about it, and they tried to cover it up, say, oh, it didn't happen, or it was just one person involved, when all the children had the same story.
Right.
And there are actually people, as you indicate in your book, who set up daycare centers.
Oh, they do.
For the
absolutely
exact purpose of attracting children.
Yeah, and this is, again, if you read the media reports closely and you put it together, that, and there was one in particular in North Carolina, and they explicitly said that they set up that it was a husband-wife team so that they could have children to rape, and they were farming the kids out to guys on the military base, the local military base, were, you know, using the kids. So a lot of times parents don't even know if their kids are being abused at daycare again, so you get into the pre-verbal, right? So it's a 2 or 3-year-old. They're taken out of the daycare during the day. They're sexually abused. They're brought back. I mean, it's really appalling. Daycares are a magnet for pedophiles, an absolute magnet.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, any one of these areas you could write an entire book on. Like, if you only focused on how many arrests there have been at the daycares around the country, it would be an entire book, right? And then those are only the people who have actually gotten caught, which is such a small number compared to how many people are actually committing the crime. So on any crime, like OUI is a good example, most people who have been arrested for OUI will say they've been driving drunk for years before they finally got caught the first time, right? So it's just about getting caught. So it's the same with this crime. It's such a massive explosion. Our law enforcement isn't prepared for it. We aren't prepared for it as a society. We haven't dedicated the resources. The good cops are completely underfunded. The good prosecutors are completely underfunded. I mean, we need hundreds of new government jobs for prosecutors and hundreds of new law enforcement who are dedicated only to this crime in order to tackle the crime. So, and, you know, pedophiles know that, and they'll talk about this. Their chances of getting caught are pretty slim, actually. Right?
Exactly. Right. And it's usually, as you indicate in your book, that is because of a mistake that they've made. Perhaps they've left something in the copier, or they've left a website open or something. It's their mistake.
And you see that? Yeah, it's crazy. Like, it's just infuriating to me because most of the arrests are not happening because of some proactive monitoring that's put in place by the institution or the agency to catch these people. No, most of the people who get caught, either they're in a chat room and they're talking to an undercover person, and so that was just sort of bad luck for them, wrong time, wrong place. They happen to be talking to an undercover investigator, or they left their thumb drive. One guy was a physician in the ER room. He left his thumb drive full of child rape and torture in the computer. And somebody actually, instead of just throwing it out or giving it back to him, they actually looked at what was on it and then they reported it. So if that woman hadn't looked at it, he wouldn't have been caught. If she hadn't left his thumb drive, she wouldn't have been caught. Professors have printed out copies of child rape and torture on university printers, and that's how they got caught, because they left one behind and their coworker found it. One professor in Michigan, he got caught because he went into the classroom and he was trying to show his students a PowerPoint relevant to the class he was teaching, and by mistake, he opened up his child pornography collection up on the video screen for everybody to see in the classroom. You know, that's how the guy got caught. So if you imagine if there were actually proactive monitoring put in place to monitor the electronic network, how many more people would be caught? It would just be astounding. And that's the only way to clean it up. I mean, we have to shut down all the servers in America who we know have identified distributing this crime, this rape and torture of children, and we have to get our local institutions to start asking law enforcement to check their networks, to start installing software which will prevent this crime from happening at their place of worship or their place of work.
Right. Now, statistically, in your book, you say that half of all of the people who access this smut, this horrible stuff, are from America. Half?
So so it's a guess. It's a guesstimate. But so this is another thing that Mainstream Reporter has, and I'd be happy to be corrected. I could be wrong, but I have been obsessively researching this, and I haven't seen one American news organization report. So this is about, and I have the graphs. This is, to me, it's just really shocking. So it's on page 17 in the paperback. So the Internet Watch Foundation in England reports about URLs, right? These are just URLs. These aren't even servers. So America was the top country until this past year when the Netherlands beat us, but not by much. But until this year, we had more URLs, web addresses, which were based here in America than any place else in the world, right? Europol reported that we had about half of the servers that were distributing child pornography around the world were based here in America. So if the European police have identified those servers, they know where they are, why hasn't the U.S. government shut those down? Why has the U.S. government allowed half of the servers distributing child pornography globally to be operating in the U.S.? And why didn't anybody report on this? I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big statistic. And I put in the book a couple of tables just so that people would see, wow, this is really true. There's Europol's strategic assessment of commercial sexual exploitation of children from 2015. And they show all of the different countries. Again, America is like far and above. In 2013, this was a URL, so 2,617 in America. And the next country after that was Holland with 942. And then they report about where the servers are. Why didn't American media report on that? Why aren't they reporting on it now? Why are we allowing those to be available? So if that's happening in America, how are they producing these videos that they're distributing and images? And they're raping children. I mean, to produce child pornography, you have to rape a child, and you document that rape with a video. So these are American children, right? These are our children, and they're very often children that we know who you would never guess this is happening to, right? It's fathers doing it to their own children, and it's men in positions of power over and over and over again. When you start to look at the arrests, it's white men in positions of power, again and again and again.
Right. Now, there's also been the killing or attempted killing of these children to reduce the so they wouldn't be able to witness, be a witness.
Right. Yep. So it's the same strategy. You have to think like a pedophile. So a pediatric oncologist, a terminally ill child makes a perfect target because dead children can't be a witness, right? So if he knows, he's the pediatric oncologist, he knows exactly when this child's going to die, exactly how much time this child has left. So if he can start to molest this child, the child's got 2 or 3 months left, that's, for a pedophile, that's a perfect target. That's, you can't get more vulnerable than that, you know? And so the same with the special education teachers. And then the same with killing them. This is a very frequent thing, that they will kill the children, because if the child is killed, the child can't be a witness. So there's no witness, there's no crime, and they walk free, right? And there was a local case, which I profiled in that section in the book, and he was chair, and this is not a partisan issue, and I refuse to ever, but it's just as many Democrats as Republicans, liberals, conservatives, religious, non-religious. There's nothing at all partisan about, unfortunately, child sex abuse. But this guy was Michael Gardner. He was the chair of the Democratic Party here in Falls Church, Virginia. So he did a couple things which are really typical of pedophiles. So he was an elite but well-respected man in the community, and he used his own children as bait. So it was his daughter's 10th birthday party, and she had a slumber party for her birthday, and he molested her friends at her slumber party for her 10th birthday. This is not a human being who cares about people, right? So that he then attempted to have the children murdered from jail so he couldn't be prosecuted.
Oh, gosh. Okay, we are going to a 3-minute break. I know that you have to leave. Thank you so very, very, very much for being on the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for caring about the subject. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. Bless your heart.
Okay, goodbye. Thank you. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Deanna, and Dr. Lori could not stay the whole time. She was just a wealth of information. I do hope that you will be able to purchase her book. The name of the book is Epidemic, America's Trade in Child Rape. Okay, we're going to open the phone lines and talk about what you've just heard or any other subject, and the number is 800-313-9443, and first off, we'll take Susan, and where's Susan? Tom. Okay, Tom, welcome.
Yes, right. What a shame, because I wanted to talk to her and ask her about Nancy Schaefer and Carol Keaton Strayhorn.
Yes, I'm going to talk about Nancy Schaefer. She didn't cover that in her book. The Nancy Schaefer incident. but that is certainly important. Did you want to talk about that or say something about that?
I don't know if anybody realizes, and you probably don't realize that, and the primary issue I've been doing battle for, hidden underneath that, is the supply chain for the pedophilia trade. I want to ask her about the National Child Welfare Act of 1993, enhanced by the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 1997, authored by Hillary Clinton. The reason I say Hillary is because Hillary was the mastermind behind that, and Bill, of course, got it passed, or got through Congress and got it signed into law.
Right. Now, she really didn't cover it. She did talk about, she says, the absence of accurate data on how many federal government employees have been arrested for trading in child rape is due to the failure of the Clinton, Bush, and Obama administrations to require their executive branch agencies to maintain official numbers related to employees who access child pornography on federal government computers. So it's the last three administrations who are to be blamed, and she really didn't talk about act that was passed, but that's what she said about it.
What's really sad, when I started to be noted for this battle for children and families, if you open up the website Family versus State in the center panel there, it links you to it's now a dead link, but it did have all the data that I had been publishing for a mother in Chicago. And in Chicago, as I published that information on this lady's case, where her two daughters literally were taken out of school. They were, one was I think 7, the other 9. And they've been in the system, and they've gone through a half a dozen abortions apiece. I'm talking about young ladies taken into Child Protective Services. When I had that published, I was threatened by the AG there in Illinois. And then Ayala Kaufman and I had a personal appointment with Barack Obama, Senator Obama in D.C. We went there, and even though we had a well-confirmed appointment, he refused to see us. And at that time, I began to realize I was not only just dealing with child protective issues, but a feeder mechanism for the, pedophilia rings. And by the way, I wanted to ask her about Carol Keaton Strayhorn, and I hope you do some investigating. You do know, Deanna, that I was assaulted and blinded in D.C. as I worked on this issue. So, Orrin Hatch, thankfully, is a good man, hiding in a diplomatic cloak. He linked me initially with Nancy Schaefer before she was taken out. And then, of course, the other good resource is Carol Keaton Strayhorn, who used to be the comptroller of Texas. And when she was asked to investigate the money flow in Child Protective Services, she was totally blown away, I guess the best term I can use, shocked to find out not only was the money being sucked away through this Child Protective Service or that Hillary Clinton bill machinery, but also many of the children were disappearing. And so she wrote a report called Gail, hold on for a second.
Stay over. Can you stay over the break? We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and we have Tom Rogers on the phone. Now, Tom, I understand that when you went to Washington, that it was more about the gassing situation with the trailers, but you say that this was not entirely the situation?
Well, in my publication in the website, I'm covering the physical aspects, right, that's affecting everybody. But curiously, when you have an infant, for example, in this case, if you go to Daniel in the Lion's Den.us or Family versus State, you have a child in a family who's suffering from this poisoning situation. They'll blame the parents, and then they'll take all of the children. And so you'll have, instead of just one child who was the primary victim of the poisoning, and this is government-created poisoning, too, you know that.
Right.
But then you have the other children who are not sickened by it because they get out and refresh and all that. But then the other children are taken because they've now accused the parents of abuse and neglect, and now they take five children instead of just one infant. And those other children, like Carol Keaton Strayhorn discovered, a good number of those children, I think she indicated even in Florida, it was almost a third of the children taken into Child Protective Service. I may be incorrect in that. But she said almost a third of the children.
Oh, right. I see where you're going with this. Right.
They're taken into child protective care, foster care, right?
Right.
And then they disappear in the system.
Right.
They go back and try to track those children. They find out that they don't exist. The foster parents will claim that they ran away or whatever. And so I'll come to find out that the Child Protective Services, you know, under that National Child Welfare Act engine, as well as the Adoption and Safe Families Act of 93 and then 97, that's the perverse incentive to get these kids in. And once they get into foster care, they can disappear easily or be taken into a foster situation where they are molested, like the two little girls from Illinois.
Right.
See, I don't write about that in there because that's threatening to your life. Nobody wants to expose the pedophile issue because these people have no respect for life altogether. And they don't mind taking you out as their expositor.
Right. And you mentioned Nancy Schaefer, and she was the former Georgia senator. And she was
right.
She investigated these crimes and abuse and the kidnapping within Georgia's Child Protective Services, and she found that it had become corrupt and the entire system was broken beyond repair, and she published The Corrupt Business of Child Protective Services. And on March 26, 2010, they say it was reported that the husband killed his wife and then himself, which we know is not true, which we surmise is not true.
I know it was not true. I know Nancy. I knew Nancy.
Yeah.
Her drive was to stop this.
Of course.
Sodomizing of children.
Yes.
And it's like you drop a pebble into the water. You know, the child is that clear, flat body of water, and the rapist is the rock that drops into that pool. And the ripples of injury and sadness continue forever.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I worked as a advisor with the Board of Pardons here in Utah. And it was just a real eye-opener for me to find out how many of those inmates were victims of foster care and their whole social foundation was destroyed. They didn't know how to interact with their marriages, or didn't know how to interact with this society, and they didn't know how to interact with children.
Right.
In fact, one case is, I don't want to even say a word about, but he was a child molester that I had to work with the Board of Pardons on. So whenever these people are doing their personal gratification, they have no clue as to how far spread that evil extends.
Right.
It just goes on forever. Anyway, I wish I could have talked to your guest and asked her to, respond on those two acts. Plus also to report on Nancy Schaefer and hope she gets to talk to Carol Keaton Strayhorn.
Yeah, I don't think she
mentioned her in the book.
Can you open
anything on Carol Keaton while you're there?
She didn't talk about anything. She didn't mention that person in her book. But
well, if you have opportunity to contact her, you might ask her about
will,
that, and then if she would. Yeah, since I can't see her book. I can't see to get into her website. And maybe she could call me and I could help her understand what I, how to say, found out about as I was simply trying to save the lives of these children and then keep a family intact, keep the families connected.
Sure.
We are in Sodom and Gomorrah.
It's
in our face.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Which is what her book indicates. Well,
by the way, Deanna, I have to apologize to you. I think you've heard me talking to the other hosts. I did not realize when I was on the air with you that my website had been corrupted.
Oh,
and what
no.
You saw on the what you saw on the website was really crappy. Sorry to say. But at least at this moment, as far as I know, it's restored. So if you go into either gassyamerica.com, I have a couple of aliases for that. One of them is Infanticide USA.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into that, and now it should be, media active, and it's, I have a seven-frame PowerPoint, like presentation at the top. So within a few moments, you get the whole story of the poisoning issue. Of course, I don't touch the background of CPS and the pedophile's feeding ring as the best I can describe it. When you get a child taken out of your home, put into government or state care, that's perfect for the pedophile ring. They go into, you know, a lot of the social workers, you know, you're talking about teachers, you're talking about university professors or whatever. Child Protective Services has social workers, and a lot of them are offenders.
Right.
In fact, I developed a very good relationship with the Utah Attorney General, and that's one of the things that he shared with me. He says, I have a problem. Not his personal problem, but he has a department full of creeps. And he was trying to clean them out, and guess what happened to him?
He got him removed. Lost his job. Lost his life.
Yeah, anytime you interfere with this cabal, they will do everything they can to get you out of their business and not indict them.
Right.
Anyway, I apologize for kind of downloading on you, but,
that's okay.
I'm hoping people, by the way, just as a side note on the physical issue of my labors there, I just had another dead man found in his mobile home right here in Kaysville.
Wow.
So anybody out there listening to Deanna, if you have a friend or family member living in a mobile or manufactured home, please check my website. And by the way, remember that if they have their children sickened and the parents will be intoxicated by that same poison that takes their baby down, they will be accused of neglect or abuse, and they'll be the prime objects of this very subject that Deanna's been speaking with her guest today.
Right.
Sorry for struggling in my speech. Well, when they took out my sight, they took out my teeth, too.
Whoops. Okay, well,
and
thanks.
They damaged a lot of the nerve system in my face. But it's a little hard for me to say things as clearly as I want.
Do a really good job, Thomas. You do. And thank you for
for
calling in. Thank you. All righty. Let's take Russell in Minnesota. Russell.
I think your guest mentioned just there momentarily that this does occur. Some of these pedophiles, not all of them do be men, most of the time it is, but there have been some cases of a female pedophile ring. Probably you're aware, now you remember the National Organization of Women, NOW, headed by Gloria Steinem, who was a CIA operative. This is how they were able to cover up a lot of the actions that were done by these pedophile women. And I have studied her.
I have studied Gloria Steinem and the organization. I recognize that she was associated with the CIA. The CIA actually recruited her, and she was their asset. But I don't know that she was into pedophilia, because I must have missed that chapter, but for that.
I have firsthand knowledge of it, Deanna. I could share with you. Back in the late 60s, I was abducted by a gang of these women, and I was taken to an island.
Russ, are you there? Okay. Well, Russ, I'm sorry, but. Okay, we'll take calls at 800-313-9443. As Dr. Lori said, pedophiles have infiltrated government service and cultivated positions of power to protect their crimes and access children. And that is that is what they do. That is how they accomplish this. And then they are protected by their superiors, who are often involved in the same kinds of things. Now, in early October, I said in a program, and I want to kind of backtrack and talk a little bit about some things that have been written recently, and also just some things that have been on my mind since I interviewed Dr. Banks. Okay, Hugh Hefner was an asset for this. I wouldn't be surprised if Hugh Hefner was an asset for the CIA. When I look, as I mentioned to our guest, I also bought Trafficking. And that gives you a different view of who owns what companies and how. It actually talks about Jeffrey Epstein and his, what he was doing and the things that he was engaged in. And I learned a great deal from that book also. Let's take another call. Let's take Ed in Utah. Ed?
Am I on?
Yes, you're on.
Deanna?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Great calls here, particularly from Tom, my fellow Utahan. He's just a wealth of information.
Yes,
he is, on many subjects. Here's the thing. I first want to ask you, have you seen on rants.com the pedophile accusing videos concerning Joe Biden?
No, I haven't. I don't frequent that.
Well, listen, I almost thought you guys were going to steer and veer into it today. Anybody listening to me right now, if they will go to Rents, RENSE.com, Jeff has posted, not accusations, I kind of misspoke there, the video. It takes a lot, as you can well imagine. I've had conversation with you before, many times, Deanna. It takes a lot to shock me on this. I've read Kathy O'Brien's accounts, some credible, some not. I have read, of course, the Franklin cover-up. I go back with the reports of Ted Gunderson, the late Ted Gunderson,
right,
what have you. This video will shock you after the show if you'll care to look at it. You scroll down, of course, in Jeff Rentz's middle page on Rentz.com, way, way down at the bottom on the middle headlines. The video is shocking. What it is, Joe Biden at ceremonies with Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who Jeff Sessions you see having to swat Joe Biden's hands away from his granddaughters. This is one of the particularly disturbing videos on this that this brave woman has put together. Apparently both YouTube and Google are trying to find ways to use some legal jargon to block these videos altogether. So maybe you should look at them while they're still up. I saw them yesterday, so they're still there. About Joe Biden, you almost need an airplane barf bag to watch this man at ceremonies with identifiable people, including Jeff Sessions and others. Then it switches to other videos that this woman has put together about this freak, Joe Biden. I didn't have an idea. I just kind of knew about things in general with them, that ilk. But to see Joe Biden and to see no mention of him, yet it's almost like I'm going with your theory. Earlier in the program, I heard you, Deanna, say that what's going on with all the exposure with Charlie Rose and what have you is almost like a distraction. You are right on your hunch again, ma'am. You are right, because with Joe Biden being in here, I would stand up for Al Franken. I would give him a pass and let that go compared to what I'm seeing with Joe Biden. And this goes back to General Flynn, who maybe is why Trump was forced to get rid of him. When you have General Flynn wanting to go after Podesta and the Pizzagate scandal. Some say he was going to try to take down the pedophile network.
Wow. Of course, the Pizzagate was kind of a different, okay, I brought the video up. Somebody sent me a link. Thank you very much. Yeah, the Pizzagate. I just recently studied that, but I think with me, I'm really somebody that needs to have sources, and I'm sure that this video is very good, and I definitely will watch it. There's certainly a lot of views.
Okay.
And I think a lot of people, whether they're high up in the government or not, are involved in this kind of activity and behavior just as a result of reading Dr. Lori's book. Would you like to stay over? We'll be right back. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and we have Ed on the phone. Ed, are you there? Yo, Ed, are you there?
Yeah, I am here, Deanna.
Okay.
I'll just wrap. Yes, did you want to say something, or do you want me to wrap up?
Well, you can just tell us what you're going to tell us. I did.
Okay.
Thank you for sending. Our producer sent me the link. There's links in
okay.
the chat room, and As I mentioned, I think anybody that's high up in government, after reading this other book, Trafficking, they're all very connected. And I've read numerous things about the Bush family, both the father and the son, and Prince Andrew, and their connection with Jeffrey Epstein and Clinton going to the islands with Epstein. It's just sickening.
It's sick beyond belief, and your hunch at the earlier part of the show that so much coming out about Charlie Rose while serious is a distraction compared to what we're talking about here. And to that end, you may or may not agree with me, but I'm telling you, I stand four square at this point in time with Judge Roy Moore. Not giving him an exception, I believe they were using the hysteria of some of the things coming out, Harvey Weinstein et al., to throw him into the mix. But the fact is, the facts are not adding up. Judge Roy Moore, nothing in him is adjudicatable against him. Gloria Allred refuses to turn over the yearbook because there is no yearbook. It's, she had a piece of paper on there. The fact is that this was a Washington Post, the same paper that took down Mr. Nixon, covered up for the JFK and what have you, and tried to bring down Donald Trump a year ago in favor of Hillary, just as you've been hearing about from Tom and what have you, that is behind the pedophile rings. So to that end, I want to say that I think even not only is Roy Moore not involved in this, certainly he did like younger women because he married a younger woman, 14 years his junior. That's in a totally different category than what we're talking about here. They fear that he would go in and maybe clean up house. And this is why McConnell wants to stop him. McConnell hasn't said a word about the video you're about to watch about Joe Biden, who right there in the White House, under C-SPAN cameras, felt free with his hands Deanna.
Wow.
With children.
Well, with regards to Roy Moore, back in 1991, they're bringing stuff up from 1991, and I'm thinking, she said that her mother was right there when they met with him in his office because he was a lawyer, and the daughter was getting a divorce, and that he was fresh with her then. I'm thinking, well, why didn't you report it then? A person is innocent until proven guilty. And definitely they need to bring forth, this proof. With anybody, a person is innocent until proven guilty.
Right. And that the two girls, we're not talking about the cascade of other, women. We're talking about Lee Kaufman and then of course, Bev Nelson. Now Lee Kaufman is the first one to claim when she was 14. She has falsely accused three pastors in Alabama. Deanna, that should be brought out there on CNN. Of course, they won't. They want to make him look guilty. And then, of course, Bev Nelson, the yearbook lady, total lies on there. They cannot even produce the yearbook. Even Wolf Blitzer couldn't take it with Gloria Allred on camera.
Right. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Thanks, Ed.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we're taking calls at 800-313-9443, and we have Frank in North Carolina. Frank?
Yes, Deanna, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, you're welcome.
Sometimes it just doesn't much seem that the world is even worth saving, does it?
It's pretty discouraging. When I was reading that book, I was in shock. As I mentioned earlier, we don't want to believe that these things exist, so we have a tendency to avoid talking or thinking about them because we can't believe that people could be that evil as to rape day-old infants. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, I was listening and I thought maybe perhaps you got cut off during the conversation or something. Were you going to say something about the video that the link that you had been sent regarding Joe Biden? Had you had a chance to watch it during the break?
No, I didn't watch it during the break. I was going to, but and I started it, and I will do it the minute the program is over. But it does not surprise me. Whatever he does would not be a shock to me because I think he's a piece of garbage to begin with, even before somebody said something about a video.
I knew he was real creepy. I thought it was,
right,
you know, more with adult women. I don't recall being aware, you know, with the younger women, like granddaughters and stuff like that. That's really interesting. I would love to see that video. And so, Jeff Sessions slapping his hand to keep his hand off of Jeff Sessions' granddaughters. Is that what they said?
Right.
And I've heard about, Joe Biden and the Secret Service agents' wives and maybe some of the female Secret Service agents that some Secret Service agents had to hold back other agents from killing Biden because he was making moves on their wives and stuff at, I guess, little soirees or something, holidays or something like that. So, and I've seen the videos of him coming up behind women in public and making moves on them and everything. I mean, it's really creepy. I mean, you just imagine what he would do behind closed doors if he thought no one There were no cameras. That's what he does when there's cameras, right?
Right. If they do it in front of cameras, it's got to be much worse if there's no cameras available.
And I just wonder, does this go to their head when they get money and power, or is it more the guys that get money and power tend to be the kind of guys that basically have no conscience, no morals, and that allows them to get to the top because there's basically nothing standing in their way. They're willing to do whatever it takes.
Well,
according
to Dr. Lori, she said that people will put themselves in a position where they will have access to children, whether it's having their wife open a daycare center or whether it's becoming a judge or becoming whatever. That I'm reading stuff in the chat room and trying to talk at the same time. But so people in power, and it is people in power who do this. They like power. They like having power over people, and they exercise that power in horrific ways. And they can get away with it because of their authority. They can, for instance, a lawyer can get away with it because of his position. A judge can get away with it because of his position. He's not going to prosecute other judges, other lawyers, or anybody in his network. And she said that the pedophiles network, they know each other, they meet each other, they see each other in person, they trade their targets. She only covered five different areas. And she covered the military, law enforcement, legal profession, and educators. And talked a little bit about each one, and it's just mind-boggling.
Plus, if someone's in a position of power, like in the legal profession or law enforcement, people are going to be a little bit intimidated by that. If somebody's
sure.
a judge, and they're
sure.
going to be a little bit, more, they're not going to have the confidence to go after, bring charges against them as they would maybe.
Right. And the thing about that, I think I lost you. Are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Okay. Yeah, I did want to comment, though. This stuff really is real. It happened not to me. I was never a victim, thank God. And I have a brother who's approximately 4 years younger than me. Of course, I always looked after him. I would probably think it happened to him. But, yeah, back when I was like seven, eight, nine years old, there was a period of time where my parents, of course, got divorced, like around 1975. My mom worked. She always worked. And I'll tell you some stories about that, too, because she was an executive secretary for some big bankers and stuff. And of course, they were always putting the moves on. By the way, the thing that she said was always the most effective that stopped the dead in their tracks is, what would your wife think? And that always stopped them dead in their tracks. And she didn't
mm-hmm.
help that. But we were picked up, I guess, by this van. And it was in here. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. And it's long defunct now. It's been out of business decades ago. But it was called Raggedy Ann and Andy at the time. Cutesy little thing, daycare, after school, daycare type thing. And there were a lot of kids there. I never really had any major problems. There was this one bully guy who was a little bit of a problem. But there was a guy, a male, that worked there. And, he's a little bit, off. He kind of looked like Woody Allen. That's about the best way I could describe him, the glasses and everything. And a short little guy looked like Woody Allen. And he seemed very non-threatening. And women, I guess, kind of liked him. Because he was non-threatening. Short little guy, he's not going to hurt anybody, but he was a predator. And years later, when I became a young adult, I came home from the military one time and my mom had cut this paper out of the article and she's like, look, you remember that guy? I'm like, yeah, I remember. And she's, you know, I'm looking at the headline, you know, he was arrested, you know, for, child molestation or whatever it was a long time ago. But, I'm like, that doesn't surprise me at all. Because I remember there were unaccounted for periods of time where, well, actually what happened was, I actually led an escape from that place. We dug a tunnel out of there, over a period of days and covered it up. So they didn't know that we were digging it. And we would have people blocking off where the digging was going on, and they had to call the fire department and get us, rounded up in the woods. That was a good childhood memory, actually. But I personally was never attacked or anything, but that guy, I don't know whether there had been any complaints filed against him or what, but for whatever reason, he left. And he started running, child daycare, a lot of the single mothers, he started running the daycare out of his home. So then there was no supervision, and I guess all these women, I guess just naive women back in the 70s, they're like, oh, well, this guy, you know, he's a man, you know, he's gonna tell, I don't remember any girls being there. It seemed like most, if not all, of the children were males. But looking back on it now, what he did was he preyed on the weakest.
Oh, that's what they do. Sure.
And you'd be like, where is John? You know, his name was John. And, you know, where's that other kid? And what he would do, he would take these kids and he'd go upstairs. We'd be like in the basement playing with toys and stuff. And, you know, whatever, watching TV. And of course,
you're talking about this was back in the 70s. And
yes.
That did happen. But with the technology of the internet and with smartphones and things like that, it has just exacerbated the entire situation where it has become, like Dr. Lori said, epidemic. Because now it's bringing all of these creeps out of the wood. It's bringing everybody out and people they get away with it because they protect each other, because they network, because they have their own language. It's epidemic.
Yeah, people out there, if you've got, you know, I guess most of the people who listen to these shows, I don't know if there might be a little older, old and have young daughters, but if you got granddaughters or, you know, young relative, female or male relatives out there, I mean, you got to be real careful. And, you know, I mean, you hate to unjustly target someone, but, you know, men, grown adult men who are seeking careers and looking after little children and whatnot. I don't know. To me, that's a red flag. You need to have adults. You need to have other adults around and supervising that. Because I mean, these guys are crazy. I mean, you just can't imagine that somebody would do this stuff. I mean, it takes a lot.
That's why we don't want to think that people can do this, but they do this. And they do it more frequently than any of us can even imagine.
It's like one in three American females is sexually molested or something, aren't they? I mean, by the time they're X number of years old, by a relative or something. You know.
Mm-hmm. Or an ex-boyfriend. Or...
Yeah. I'm talking about young girls or, you know, underage girls, though. I can actually say that I never had sex with any woman under the age of my age. A lot of kissing and stuff like that, but I was also young at the time, too.
Sure.
But, hey, one last thing before I drop off. I did hear a report this last week that on Anthony Weiner's computer, of all people, there was something on there about Hillary Clinton. And she had six or seven visits to Lolita Island. I don't know if she was there at the same time Bill Clinton was there or what, but, yeah, it takes me back to some of Kathy O'Brien's, claims. But, anyway, that's all I have.
Well, thank you very much for your phone call. All righty, let's take, Kathy in Missouri. Kathy?
Yes. Hi, I am so grateful that I don't have young children right now. I don't know what I would do with all these issues, you know what I mean? But I heard someone one time say that they don't leave their children with anyone that doesn't love them. but well, you've got the husband.
That's the problem. The problem is that these pedophiles act like they love their these children.
Exactly.
So,
they can fake it, and then when you've got husbands involved with pornography, I don't remember his name, but he used to be on at night, I think before John Stettmiller, and he told a story of a Utah police officer who was drugging his wife and doing things to her and videotaping it and showing it to the boyfriends, you know? This is a problem. I mean, and that, if my grandfather had even dreamed about going onto the internet pornography one time, my grandmother, he would have never gotten back in the house, period. And he would have come home, that computer would have been on the curb, she would have taken a baseball bat to it, and she would have probably never spoken to him again. And with the economy like this, women have a difficult time leaving bad men, and I can understand that because right now I've got three bad men bullying me where I live. My house is perfectly maintained. I rake the leaves. I pick up the stray trash, but I'm not a degenerate, and I might complain about black mold in a wall. You know what I mean? They don't want that. I'd rather just have some crackhead that will stay quiet. But when we've got men surfing pornography, and anyone that tolerates pornography at all in the home is guilty.
They're criminals. They're criminals.
When you touch that realm, you touch that realm of adult, any pornography, you're feeding the beast, period. And it's like Catherine Austin Fitz says don't feed the tapeworm, period. So I have been an anti-pornographer my entire life, and I think women need to start taking a stronger stand and not tolerating this nonsense out of the men, period. Or the women. Now women
are perfect. It's not nonsense. It's a criminal act against babies and infants and children under the age of 12.
It's criminal. That starts with adults, but I'm talking about even pornography in general. It starts usually with the adult pornography, okay? And then it goes into the other later. That's what I'm saying. Any of it is bad, and pull the plug. That's what I tell everyone. And don't tolerate that. That's not normal. But when I divorced, I had a dual... I'm sorry?
I don't know where it starts, but it's
well, I'm a
criminal.
Social worker by degree, and back in the 80s when we had a kid go up missing, the first thing they would tell us to do when I worked for Child Protective Service, it was in my internship in college, they'd say, go to the pervert place, go to that little, the titty bar restaurant, go to the magazine shop and find out which perv is missing today, because that's the first place we would start looking for the perv who kidnapped the kid, period. Pornography is dark, it's evil. Whether it's any kind of it is nasty. It's exploitative, period. So I don't like any of it. And I tell everyone, pull the plug. You know, don't feed the tapeworm. But, it's terrible. And try to always be where you can be self-sufficient so that if you need to walk away from one of these characters you might be married to. But imagine that guy in Utah was watching. This cop was videotaping his wife and doing things to his kids. And they all ended up dying. He killed them. Okay? And that guy was showing that to his little boyfriends in town. How many other things are these men doing? And the men are not policing the men. That's a problem in this country. I can find 10 women that will say, hey, men, you don't know what to do. And the men have got to start policing the men, period. And I'm not a fan of this perversion and all this, you know, slut whore stuff we've got up in the big house in the, it's the White House, okay? I'm not a fan of any of that stuff either. You know what I mean? Perversion.
Criminality is criminality, whether it's in the White House or the house next door or wherever.
I'm not saying they're doing the underage stuff there. I'm just saying all this slut whore tip hanging out, you know, all this stuff. It's all nasty. That's what I'm saying, though. We got to, like, basically get back to the basics here and stop feeding the tapeworm and stop watching all this garbage, all of it. Just pull the plug. And I think that's a good place to start and try to stay self-sufficient. So if you do get a hold of a mate, a bad man or whatever that's doing something nasty, you can walk and protect your kids. Women have got to maintain their self-sufficiency, but also the men need to start policing the men. It's not funny anymore. It's never been funny. And men policing men has got to happen. And that's not happening.
Great.
And that's, I think, how we get a hold of it.
So you need to read her book and take advice from, or take her suggestions with the action items so that we can do something about it. Because if we wait for men to start policing men, it's just never going to happen. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, you've got
it. It's never going to happen. Okay, well, thanks, Kathy. Thank you very much.
Take care. Great show. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All righty. The one thing, too, that I want to go back to what Dr. Banks was talking about last week. She was talking about the fact that they used the AIDS epidemic, which was a crisis. And we all know that men in power usually use a crisis, whether it was Winston Churchill that says, never waste a good crisis, or whether it was Rahm Emanuel who said, never let a good crisis go to waste. It's all the same. They create a crisis in order to reach some sort of objective. And what she said was that they created this crisis of the AIDS in order to implement a greater enhancement of sex education in the schools. Now, sex education should be taught in the home by parents, not by strangers hired by the government. Tragically, unintentional instruction exists in many homes. It was more benign before the advent of the internet and smartphones with cameras, as I said before. But even before that, there can be unintentional instruction. I was talking to somebody yesterday who told me a story about her son-in-law who had all this pornography in the home. He had videos. He had all this stuff. And was out in the open where his two of his boys saw this. And it led to a very tragic situation. Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And anyway, I was talking about Dr. Banks, and she said that the AIDS epidemic was really a crisis that they would use to enhance the sex education in the schools. And then she referred to the 1972 Gay Rights Platform. And I'm going to share some of that with you. And first I'm going to share with you something that was first printed in the Gay Community News on February the 15th through the 21st of 1987. And this was by Michael Swift. And I quote, "We shall sodomize your sons, emblems of your feeble masculinity, of your shallow dreams and vulgar lies. We shall seduce them in your schools, in your dormitories, in your gymnasiums, in your locker rooms, in your sports arenas, in your seminaries, in your youth groups, in your movie theater bathrooms, in your army bunkhouses, in your truck stops, in all your male clubs, in your houses of Congress, wherever men are with men together. Your sons shall become our minions and do our bidding. They will be recast in our image. They will come to crave and adore us. Women, we cry for freedom. You say you are no longer satisfied with men. They make you unhappy. We, connoisseurs of the masculine face, masculine physique, shall take your men from you then. We will amuse them. We will instruct them. We will embrace them when they weep. Women, you say you wish to live with each other instead of with a man? Then go and be with each other. We shall give your men pleasures they have never known because we are foremost men too. And only one man knows how to truly please another man. Only one man can understand the depth and feeling, the mind and body of another man." And I'll quit there. And let me skip down to the 1972 Gay Rights Platform, which Dr. Banks referred to, and some of the things that they wanted to do. Number one, amend all federal civil rights acts, other legislation and government controls to prohibit discrimination in employment, housing, public accommodations, and public services. Number two, issuance, by the president of an executive order prohibiting the military from excluding, for reasons of their sexual orientation, persons who, of their own volition, desire entrance into the armed services, and from issuing less than fully honorable discharges for homosexuality, and the upgrading to fully honorable all such discharges previously issued with retroactive benefits. I'm going to skip down to number six. Federal encouragement and support for sex education courses prepared and taught by gay men and women presenting homosexuality as a valid, healthy preference and lifestyle, as a viable alternative to heterosexuality. I'm going to skip down to number 9. Immediate release of all gay women and men now incarcerated in detention centers, prisons, and mental institutions because of sexual offense charges relating to victimless crimes or sexual orientation, and that adequate compensation be made for the physical and mental duress encountered, and that all existing records relating to the incarceration be immediately expunged. There are no victimless crimes when you're talking about pedophilia. Now, that's at the federal level. At the state level, number 7, I'm going to skip down to number 7, repeal all laws governing the age of sexual consent. And one of the things that Dr. Banks said last week was that they wanted to lower the consenting age, which is right there, repeal of all laws governing the age of sexual consent. This is, and if you read the whole document, it's about a 14-page document. Let me just skip down. Okay. There was a platform at the 1993 March on Washington for Lesbian, Gay, and Bi Equal Rights and Liberation. Number 4, we demand full and equal inclusion of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgendered people in the educational system, and inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies and multicultural curricula. In other words, they are going to be teaching this in the schools as another lifestyle. And that's part of their agenda. Okay, reading more as we go down, I'm on page 6. We demand massive increase and funding for AIDS education, research, and patient care, universal access to health care, including alternative therapies, and an end to sexism in medical research and health care. They also demand the redefinition of sexual reassignment surgeries as medical, not cosmetic treatment. And reading down, we demand full and equal inclusion of lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgendered people in the educational system, and inclusion of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies in multicultural curricula. Culturally inclusive lesbian, gay, bisexual. Oh, going to a break. We'll be right back. This is Deanna, and I was just sharing with you the 1972 Gay Rights Platform and what they were demanding, and now we're down to 1993 and their demands there. Culturally inclusive lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender studies program and information on abortion, AIDS, HIV, child care, and sexuality at all levels of education, meaning the primary grades. Establishment of campus offices and programs to address lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender students' special needs. An end to discrimination at all levels of education. Okay, so this also says repeal all English-only laws and restore and enforce bilingual education. So they have quite a lot of things that they are demanding. And this is an article from Marshall, Kirk, and Erastus Pill. And he said, the first order of business is desensitization of the American public concerning gays and gay rights. To desensitize the public is to help it view homosexuality with indifference instead of with keen emotion. So how do you think they're going to do that? How do you think that they're going to reprogram? Okay, so far, Gay Hollywood has provided our best, this is from them, our best covert weapon in the battle to desensitize the mainstream. Bit by bit, over the past 10 years, gay characters and gay themes have been introduced into TV programs and films, though often this has been done to achieve comedic and ridiculous effects. On the whole, the impact has been encouraging. In a campaign to win over the public, get this, gays must be cast as victims in need of protection so that straights will be inclined by reflex to assume the role of protector. Obviously, the victim card is something that a lot of groups have tried and successfully used. It almost goes without saying, again from the book, or from this article, it almost goes without saying that groups on the farthest margin of acceptability, such as NAMBLA, which is North American Man-Boy Love Association, must play no part at all in such a campaign. Suspected child molesters will never look like victims. So they have it all planned out, how they're going to desensitize people, and again from their article, the public should be shown images of ranting homophobes whose secondary traits and beliefs disgust middle America. These images must include the Ku Klux Klan demanding that gays be burned alive or castrated. So they're going to use those kind of techniques in order to desensitize Americans to accept their agenda. And the list, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, the fourth generation, which came out in 2000. It's fairly lengthy. You would not believe the list of, it's amazing. It's probably 30 different, oh, I'm sure more, 30, probably 30 different, paraphilias. Which is just amazing. It's just, one of them is asphyxophilia, sexual gratification derived from activities that involve oxygen deprivation through hanging, strangulation, or other means. This is bizarre. It's awful. If you want bestiality, they talk about bestiality. And all of this is considered something that is normal. They have normalized it. They have normalized something that is destroying the culture of America. They have normalized it. Okay, do you want to call in with your views on this? The telephone number is 800-313-9443. Let me share with you some other things that in the news lately. Carolyn Yeager recently wrote an article, and I will quote from it. And the name of the article is Attack Victim Elie Wiesel Attacks 19-year-old girl and runs away. So let me bring that article up. And, okay, here we go. She said that she believed this woman, this story, this 19-year-old girl, whose name was Jenny Listman. She said, I believe Jenny Listman's story right away because radio personality Deanna Spingola had told me of her experience meeting Elie Wiesel after a speech he gave as a Holocaust survivor. I do not recall where or when this took place, but Deanna claims she went up along with other audience members to meet the famous survivor after his speech. As I remember her telling it, he fixed his gaze on her with suddenly aroused interest, and whatever physical contact took place, whether handshake or something else, he held on to her longer than she felt was appropriate. He also engaged in chatty conversation, asking her about herself. Deanna at the time, and I'm quoting this, an attractive, single, working woman, blonde and blue-eyed, felt the unmistakable sexual vibes emanating from Mr. Wiesel toward her. I suppose if she had told him where she would be after the event, he would have found a way to show up there. The impression Deanna had then, at a time she was still a believer in the Holocaust narrative, never changed. That he is a womanizer. And Carolyn goes on to say, I never doubted Deanna's account. I hope she will come forward and describe this experience in her own words for the record. I am not the only person that she told this to. And that is true. I did meet him. I met him, would you believe, in a synagogue in the northern suburbs of Chicago. It must have been around 1991 or thereabouts. I bought a signed copy of his book, Night. It was kind of a little trilogy, which I've since then, disposed of. And I know what a predator is. I grew up in a predatory environment, so I know exactly what predators do. I know how they operate. And he, in my opinion, was a predator. And I'd been in the textile business for just a few years. It was shortly after my divorce in 1988. But I knew before that, as I mentioned, I'd grown up in a predatory environment. Now, I don't know whether I want to go here or not. But yes, he was a predator, and although he it went no further than just a conversation, I felt like he was figuratively undressing me. I remember the dress that I had on that day, which I've also gotten rid of, and people can tell. I can tell because of my upbringing. Now, I had an older brother who was a predator. He was a bit of a psychopath. Just about every scar I have on my body was put there by him. He shot me with a BB gun, ran into me with his wagon, threw darts at me. It never went beyond that kind of predatory situation. But it could have. And I learned very early, my mother never wanted children. She was constantly saying, I wish to damn hell you kids had never been born. So she was not watching out for her daughter. She was not watching out for her son. I had to take care of myself, and my parents often sent us to our relatives during the summer just to get us out of the way. But one day, when my older brother was coming after me, I don't know, I hate to be personal, but these things happen. He was coming after me, and I took a knife from the drawer. It was not a stainless steel knife. It was one of those, it was a dull lead knife. I laid it on the gas burner of the stove, got it really, really hot. He came into the kitchen and I laid that knife on his upper arm, and he had that scar till the day that he died. I hadn't seen him for probably 17 years. And when I met him after a period of 17 years, and he asked me to forgive him for all the terrible things that he had done or tried to do. And I did forgive him. But I think that parents need to be careful of what they do. I said that sometimes there was unintentional instruction in the home. Now, this also happened before the internet, because parents sometimes brought things home from work, and children are very they're very curious, and we always found our Christmas presents, and sometimes we even unwrapped them or unwrapped them a little bit. Children always find things that they're not supposed to find. And I think the source of my brother's objectives was a story that he found in my father's closet. And it doesn't matter how benign you think something is, it isn't. What parents do with their children makes all the difference. Parents are supposed to protect their children from the outside world. As I mentioned, sex education should be taught in the home, not with dirty stories that are found in the parents' closet, but with love and consideration, and talk about why we have this, the ability to have children and to procreate. So parents, protect your children, because if you don't, they are going to be targets of predators. And I could have been. Now life, I had my experiences, but I did learn how to protect myself. And I did learn how to spot a predator. Believe me, I know that Elie Wiesel was a predator. And there were a lot of them out there, particularly in the textile industry. So, there were other things too that I thought a lot about. I remember interviewing a lady, and I just love her. Her name is Glendine Grant. And her daughter was a victim of human trafficking. Her daughter's name is Jessie Foster, and she was missing. She went missing, and the last time I talked to Glendine, it's probably been about a year and a half, and they still had not found her. But when children learn to recognize what is good and what is bad, and to learn how to recognize and be smart and not be victims. And of course, it's not their fault. People are naturally trusting. But there are at least 2,185 children a day that go missing in the U.S. And I often think about the JonBenet Ramsey story and some of the other things that we've heard about, and the McMartin case, and the Franklin cover-up, the rape in the military. I posted a video about Corey Feldman that talks about pedophilia as the number one problem in Hollywood. And, of course, we know about some of the instances just recently about people, actresses in Hollywood being assaulted. Now, when I was about 15, And I left home very early. I left, or I fled home very early. But when I was about 14, my father had a friend. And this friend was kind of a Hollywood scout, and he was scouting for this lady that ran a model agency. And he wanted me to go down and meet this lady, and he wanted to get me in the movies and all this baloney. And my parents actually did stick up for me, and they told me exactly what kind of a life that Hollywood would entail. And they were very blunt about it. And so I didn't meet this lady with the model agency. I was a little disappointed, but I'm glad that they protected me in that instance. They did protect me. So, and I think too, strength comes from the struggle. I don't regret the things that I experienced, because I think that I've learned from them, and I guess that's a good thing, if you learn from your experiences. Okay, we're going to take a 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna. And there was an article at The Ugly Truth that the Internet's largest porn site is opening a retail store in New York City. Is that unimaginable? And there was a time when, from what I understand, in some countries you could go in and buy porn in several areas, in several cities, but not in America. But now there's going to be one in New York. How do they get away with this stuff? How do they get away with this? Anyway, I just want to reiterate again how grateful I am for the book that Dr. Lori wrote. And I hope that each of the listeners will procure a copy. The Kindle version is really the best one because it has all the live links. Once upon a time, the worst thing that a kid could do at school was chew gum and say hell. The only tests that children took were academic. There was no aptitude test to see which corporation one is best suited for. Schools did not test hearing, vision, or any other physical thing. The only physical activities children engaged in were sports. No one ever visited the nurse because there wasn't one. Nurses were not passing out medications during the lunch break. Children brought lunch from home, where there was a cafeteria that had cooks who actually cooked a nutritious meal, and families paid a nominal fee. That was before the food industry was allowed into the school marketplace. There was no school social workers. Teachers were not instructing children how to put a condom on a banana. And they weren't seducing them, raping them. Students learned phonic-based reading, penmanship, oriented writing, pre-calculator arithmetic. There was very little bullying and nominal violence. What have we got today? How did it go from that to what we have today, where you have to be careful and consider the teacher that's teaching your children, that teacher might in fact be one of the many pedophiles that are hired by the government? 1 in 10 children will be sexually abused in school system. That is an amazing thing. Well, I thank you very much for joining me today. It was very emotional talking with Dr. Lori Handran. Again, the name of the book is Epidemic: America's Trade in Child Rape. Her website, LoriHandrahan.com. We need to talk about this. We need to stop avoiding conversation and rhetoric about this. Otherwise, they will win. Thank you so much. Talk to you next week.